I'm Monica Malpass on Inside Story. The federal tax overhaul will have a big impact on the Lehigh and Delaware Valleys. Let's get the inside story on how. Good morning. I'm Monica Malpass. Welcome to Inside Story. And let's meet our insiders today. They are Donna Gentile O'Donnell, nonprofit executive and author. Welcome back to
you,
Donna.
Good morning,
always
Monica.
Good to have you. Thanks. Ed Trzanski, foreign policy analyst. Good morning, sir. Thank you for being here. Larry Platt, journalist. Always a pleasure, Larry.
Good
Thank
morning.
You. And Dom Giordano, radio talk show host. Thank you again
Thanks,
for
Monica.
Being with us as well. You just heard a discussion on This Week with George Stephanopoulos about the stunning developments with the former National Security Advisor Mike Flynn agreeing to plead guilty to lying to the FBI. So that's a huge headline. We're not going to rediscuss that here, even though we're all well aware of it. We do want to discuss another big national story and the impact it will eventually have, and that's the federal tax plan. So are local families going to feel like they're getting enough of a benefit that they don't mind looking up and down the ladder to see who else got a bigger benefit or didn't? In other words, what's the impact that you see down the road, Don?
Well, a lot of people that are calling me are middle to upper middle class, particularly upper middle class people that are basically outraged over this because some of them are smart enough, they've done the math, and with the loss of the state and local deduction and somewhat the property tax, even though the Senate bill is iffy on that when they, if they go to conference, they're really worried about this and they're not buying the idea, surprisingly, that corporate America will prosper and suddenly that's going to lift up wages. They do buy the idea that corporate America might hire more people, but not necessarily pay more.
Right. So it would be, in theory, some people afraid that corporate America might take the bonuses mm-hmm. and not filter right. down with the benefit. Is that what you see? Or
well,
hear?
And there is evidence of that, right? The whole trickle-down theory throughout history hasn't worked to the degree that we think. Look, you can get beyond the partisan divide on this and look at Congress's Joint Committee on Taxation, which found that this bill, if enacted, is only results in 0.8% of economic growth. There isn't the windfall of growth that they're predicting.
And the fears of the deficit, which are huge for some people.
Yeah, it's this current bill is going to explode the deficit. In terms of families here in Philadelphia and throughout the Commonwealth, the impact of the removal of the right to deduct state and local taxes is a big deal, not only for the deduction, but has a significant impact on cities, municipalities throughout the Commonwealth, because now they have to be increasingly mindful that whatever burden they place on their citizens here in Philadelphia and beyond, it's an additional burden because now there's no offset to that burden.
Right, and so the amount they might be getting in the short term, $100 to a couple thousand, is that offset by what they're losing on being able to deduct this long list of everything from student loans, medical?
There is no way of knowing that just now.
Right.
There are winners and losers within the tax code. And the problem is that to try to square the circle and try to make this fit in terms of deficit targets, you need to find the money, which is why they're building in sure. tax increases in the out years, because they know they're going to have to recoup revenue. And one thing to keep in mind, and I know Congress is looking at this, the stock market just hit 24,000 this week. When Trump took office, it was at 16,000. That was astounding growth, all in anticipation of repatriation of all of the money that's overseas mm-hmm. because the tax right. law is going to change.
Right.
If it doesn't change, or if the tax cut isn't big enough on the corporate side, market's going to take a hit, and a lot of people are going to feel that because it's no longer the wealthy who are in the stock market.
Monica, I bring it back to the local level, though. It's the guy that really bothers me is the governor of New Jersey, new governor, Phil Murphy, complaining about this because they tax people to death, millionaires tax. He can't do his millionaires tax now. And because they're not getting this deduction. I don't think the Trump administration should go to war with blue states or punish them because of this. But on the other side, it underlines how odious the tax burden is.
So
right. And here's the other thing. There are already and have been for weeks protests about this locally, including at Senator Pat Toomey's office. Mm-hmm. So folks mm-hmm. are riled up and they're not going to unrile very quickly because it's not a topic that's going away so fast.
Yeah, the local story here is interesting. Look, this was a bad process that led to this bill. So and you know, no hearings and so forth. So why are Republican our local Republican congressman supporting it, it's because they're between the rock and a hard place. It's still early enough that they can get challenged in a primary. So they've got to, like, hold their nose and support
because 2018 is here and right. Virtually around the corner.
Well, one of the funny things is to hear Peter King of New York screaming about this plan because New York is a high property tax and wage tax state. And he says, we're not going to subsidize a tax cut for the rest of the country by losing this deduction. Pete, we've been subsidizing your deduction for all of these years.
It's one of, right.
So this is a really disruptive time where we're going to challenge the fundamentals of the system. But as to how it's going to play out, no one can quite tell. And remember, once it gets past the Senate, it's got to be reconciled with the House version.
The last time I saw any commentary by any of the substantive organizations, 24 out of 25 independent organizations that were rating this bill castigated on a number of fronts, mostly having to do with it blowing up the debt and not really doing what the bill sets out to do.
All right. But we're going to move on. Thank you so much. All right, let's move and talk about Congressman Bob Brady, who's been in the crosshairs of an investigation alleging that he made some illegal payments in 2012, a primary challenger to drop out of the race so that he could run unimpeded. He denies that. And now the statute of limitations has run out on a number of the charges, not all of them, but several of them, because there had been monthly extensions several times, four or five times, and the government did not apply for the latest extension on several of the charges. Does that mean he's in the clear, at least on those charges, or that this is sort of unraveling for the federal government?
It appears as if what was speculated on to be the charge may have gone away. The only caveat is, much as with the Flynn case, there's always what's called the process crime. The FBI shows up, they ask you a question, you answer the question, turns out not to be correct.
Meaning that, you lied about the answer?
But that's, if you're wondering what could they have, that's usually what sits around in the corner. But again, I just get the sense that if they wanted to go after him, he'd be in the dock right now.
Okay.
I think that's right. I think that I never thought this was a real solid case, that it's criminalizing politics, as shady as politics can be. And, you know, the feds have a losing streak right now. They've been criminalizing politics all a lot lately. The Menendez trial, the Larry Farnese thing
right.
here, McDonnell in Virginia. So if you're going to go after the king, you better take him down.
Yeah, but I would counter Seth Williams and Chaka Vitop are in jail for long stretches here too. And I think with Brady, the flaw here is, the way I see it is, in Philadelphia you're fine as long as the top Democrat infrastructure is fine with you. And then I think these guys go outside the lines thinking that's where the boundary is.
And the fact that he's been in power, you know, 30 plus years as the top Democrat and has been in Washington, obviously representing this area for a long time. Now he has a challenger, and her name is Deputy Mayor for Public Engagement Nina Ahmad, who is also a professor and has done other things and worked for the city. Do you think he is vulnerable because of the aura of possible problems for him?
Well, a couple of things. On the subject of whether or not he's vulnerable, I think he's less vulnerable than people think. And I think that matters.
Because of the structure he's built over the decades.
Because of the structure, because he is in the business of real politic. And to the point that Larry was making, that finds expression in meaningful ways when people run for re-election. The other thing I want to say is, I think with respect to Nina Ahmad's candidacy, first of all, she doesn't live in the district. She would have to move into the district. Which she said she would do. But I want to note for the record, we have a lot of seats in this Commonwealth the Democrats can take. And if Nina wants to run, if I were advising her, I would tell her to move to Charlie Dent's old district, because that's an open seat. I don't think it's useful for the Democratic Party to be involved in primary challenges, particularly when you've got a sitting congressman who is powerful,
right.
who can be helpful to Philadelphia.
Takes up the airwaves.
Exactly. Now, it's a very sexy thing to run against the chairman of the party.
No doubt.
But I don't know that it's especially useful given the national picture.
But does it get her name recognition? Does it get her down the road to something years from now?
Right.
Maybe she's got a bigger eye on?
Brady, the talk is, I mean, we see the woman that won the controller's office
right.
against Butkovitz. There's a revolutionary, Larry Krasner, my guy, is no more revolutionary than that, if I could squeeze him into the conversation.
Right.
So is Brady vulnerable? I would agree. He seems to be one of the most invulnerable, given his persona and given the favors and all that. But I think there's that spirit, and she does work for Jim Kenney. I don't know what that's about.
Okay. All right. And you were going to weigh in quickly?
Well, it's not just that Bob Brady can do a lot. He has done a lot for this region. He's got a record that isn't just hack politics. You can accuse him of that if you want. But he's really accomplished a lot.
He's delivered.
And he is a deal maker. Republicans do talk about going in having...
And he's non-ideological. He right. actually works with Republicans, which is what we really need.
And he's ranking, seen that much of in a long
and,
time.
And he's
so
the ranking. Unique. And he's the ranking member of the administration committee on the Democratic side. That is not a small matter.
He's powerful to
and
the to
everyone
the
owes
of
him.
Philadelphia.
Everyone
in
owes
ways.
Him. So yeah. And this is Philadelphia.
Owes him.
So,
you said not knows him.
Owes him.
Owes him.
Well, both.
And knows him.
And that comes into play in an election.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Up and down the line.
And this is Philadelphia. Some headlines about being investigated is often seen as a badge of honor.
That's not the problem. Revolutionary, the millennial spirit, that's right. the problem.
Got
more
it.
Than anything.
All right, let's talk about the lieutenant governor's race in the state of Pennsylvania. And State Representative Madeline Dean has announced she's going to run against Mike Stack. And others are in the race, of course. We have five other names. So what do you make of that candidacy? Again, a woman trying for a job that no woman has held here to date.
Well, first of all, let's put on the table that we shouldn't even have a lieutenant governor, right? With a mansion and a, you know.
And she says she won't live in the mansion.
She won't live in the mansion, but when you add up what we spend on this ceremonial job, it's absurd. The guy I like is Fetterman. He won 300,000 votes in the Senate primary. He's got great name recognition, and he's authentic, which is what Democrats need right now. So
even though Braddock mayor is not a large position, you think he's been able to propel his name out there enough for name recognition?
Yeah, when during the presidential campaign, Ed Rendell told Hillary's campaign, get her in a car with John Fetterman and just travel the state, and they ignored him. Mm.
So Fetterman, the other thing that's interesting, I mean, he's a Harvard grad, and he looks like he should be at NASCAR every weekend. But
nothing
he's not.
Wrong with NASCAR for our not NASCAR
right,
fans.
Right, right.
Fair,
fair point, fair point. But I think it's really important to recognize that this is a brainy, brawny guy, authentic, doing a big lift in a tough town. Braddock is one of the hardest hit towns in Pennsylvania, and this guy is rebuilding that town brick by brick. That's the kind of candidate the Democrats need to be putting forth. I think I'm surprised that he wanted to run for lieutenant governor. I would tell his campaign every week, buy a lottery ticket, and if you get lucky, run for president.
Wow. All right. I mean, does the fact that there was an investigation around the current lieutenant governor Mike Stack, who is running for re-election, about his treatment allegedly of staffers and his wife's treatment of staffers, and how the governor did send a note saying, you know, straighten up type thing, and cut back the staff back, which is why the challenger says she won't live in the lieutenant governor's mansion. She doesn't want the swirl of that to affect her. Do you think that is enough to hurt his candidacy? And the fact that Governor Wolf is not endorsing him, by the way.
So, full disclosure, Madeline Dean is a college classmate of mine.
Okay.
Known her since then. She's wonderful. She's smart. And the answer to your question is absolutely. Mike Stack has put himself in a very bad place. The governor doesn't want to be anywhere near him, and I don't think people's memories are that short.
They weren't tight to begin with in the first race when they ran together a couple of years ago. It's not like they were chummy, so it's not a big difference in their, you know, relationship, but it is a very noticeable one in the media.
What does the average person, particularly here in our area, they don't know Governor Wolf and all this stuff. They hear about the wife and Stack and the demands upon state troopers and wild stuff they're driving to the cleaners, allegedly, stuff like that. They remember that, and Fetterman is an imposing figure. I don't know that Wolf wants to be overshadowed by this guy. I've had a debate with him back to forth. He is really an imposing figure, and he's a Bernie Sanders type of a different stripe.
Man
and
of the people.
Wolf, does Wolf want that type of guy? He's really a hero of the left,
Wolf is overshadowed by his own shadow.
Well, that's true, too.
So he doesn't need any more competition than he's given himself.
Fetterman standing next to him.
I could just make a final point, two things. We have had a lieutenant governor who was a woman, Catherine Baker Noel.
My apologies to Catherine.
The late Catherine, God rest her soul. And secondly, you know, there were conversations a while ago about changing the way that we use lieutenant governors. Lieutenant governor does become relevant when Bob Casey ended up having a double organ transplant.
Absolutely.
Mark Single became the acting governor. Yeah, right. So I'm not sure that we need to get rid of the lieutenant. I think we do need to get rid of the Manchin, but I don't think it makes sense necessarily to get rid of the lieutenant governor. I think it does make sense to restructure it so they run as a ticket from the beginning.
And let's throw in the names: Lancaster County Commissioner Craig Lehman, Chester County Commissioner Kathy Cazone, and Ariana Berenger also running, so they get at least a little mention. We're going to take a break and have more on Inside Story right after this.
6ABC's Inside Story is presented by Temple University.
Welcome back to Inside Story. Opioid abuse is called the worst drug crisis in American history nationwide. Locally, New Jersey is suing one of the pharmaceutical companies that is a manufacturer of opioids. And in Pennsylvania, Governor Wolf just this week highlighted some of the increased availability of naloxone and limiting opioids when they're prescribed, redesigning the drug monitoring system, things this state is doing as well. What's it going to take to round off this horrible situation and have fewer people die, have fewer people become addicted, stop the crisis?
I think we're moving forward on that. I'm in the camp that thinks that doctors and others have been educated on this. What I would do is pill mills or these other modalities, up the penalties, and we need more agents out there going undercover to break that up.
There aren't enough treatment centers or doctors. We all know there's not enough money to treat everybody. How do we start on the treatment side?
Well, first of all, Dom's right. I mean, this really does have to start with the doctor who's going to prescribe your back pain situation. And
I don't have back pain, but just for the record. A person's back pain.
Whoever's back pain.
I'll be
situation.
Getting cards, which is very sweet.
And in terms of treatment centers, the problem is that where they are most needed, if you put them there, people start making the accusations that somehow you're driven by some sort of racial bias or some other issue. If you wind up putting it in a more wealthy community, then you get pushback there, people saying, I don't want people transiting in. Except in the case of opioids, it's really not something that's confined to a particular racial group.
No,
it's really spread across the point.
Absolutely.
Still locating a treatment center next to your school.
It's not in my backyard as usual. All right, let's talk about the Meek Mill case, still a controversy. Reverend Al Sharpton came to town recently to try to weigh in on that matter. Is this the last we've heard of it? Because he was had an emergency motion asking that he be released and denied bail again. He's still in jail is the bottom line.
I think it's dangerous to make Meek Mill the face of criminal justice reform from a strategy standpoint. That said, you know, the judge did react in an egocentric way here, and to the degree that it can call attention to the problem with the parole and probation system, that's a healthy thing. Because let's be real, like, we don't, society doesn't need protection from a bad rapper, which is what this is about. He is no threat to any of us.
So you believe she got too involved in him personally trying to reform him as one of her projects, if you will. I'm not speaking for the judge,
yeah,
but this is what has been discussed prior weeks.
Yeah, and the red herring to me is showing up at Broad Street Ministries when he's supposed to be feeding the homeless and he's folding T-shirts instead and upbraiding him for that. Like, she was strangely obsessed.
Okay.
If all of those characterizations about Judge Brinkley are accurate, then to Larry's point, that's a really big problem because there's a blurred line between the judiciary and the people that are empowered to impose the will of the judiciary, and I think that's a problem. But there was a really terrific editorial written this past week on the Meek Mill issue by Brian Lentz, who talked about the relevance of not having Meek Mill be the face of the need for criminal justice reform. We desperately need criminal justice reform in this country. We lock up way too many people. We lock up more people in this country on a percentage basis than any other country in the world. Right. We need to take a hard look at that and not let this be the face of that problem.
All right, let's move on and talk quickly about the sexual harassment issue that has dominated headlines for the last several months. It appears to be touching every industry from Hollywood now to network news, as well as political realm, state, local, and national. Almost no industry seems immune to it. What do you think it's going to take to stop this issue from occurring, if it can be stopped, and how much are regular citizens in their taxes, paying in legal fees and settlements of cases we don't even know about.
Well, I think the thing I'm looking at is the overreaction on silly stuff that I don't think is provocative. The Girl Scouts of America telling people not to hug Aunt Ida with your children because that continues consent issues down the road is stupid. This issue is hard because you do have guys with power, sometimes vast power, and a cadre of people to attack you if you come after them on it. Hopefully some of that's being peeled away because of the just daily drumbeat of publicity of what's going to happen if you're engaged in that.
And do you believe that it's people now just piling on, or are these legitimate cases that we're going to hear years from now about and look back and go, that was legitimate?
The answer is yes to both. And what's really fascinating, so you had Bill O'Reilly, Roger Ailes, that happened. It was condemnation of conservative news. Harvey Weinstein, when that happened, that really unleashed the floodgates. And right now, this question of the powerful being held accountable, I don't know where it stops. I think this is a hard swing of the pendulum that's going to take a very long time to find a center.
It's a sea change. It's almost a revolution, if you will.
Absolutely.
Social
Savannah
revolution.
Guthrie said, used the word reckoning, which I thought was, this really is a national reckoning. And the thing that interests me is the fact that corporate America is acting right away, right? Matt Lauer's out in 24 hours. Mm. Look at Congress with a right. secret slush fund to settle these things for years.
Well, Pelosi just came around to say that Conyers got to know, and Clyburn just said he's got to know.
Last comment, and then we have to run.
A couple of important things. This is a national parade of shame that crosses every industry, every class line. I'm glad that women are stepping forward. Every woman I know has spoken about being sexually harassed. We talk among us. I mean, it's like a secret society. So this, we know what actually happens with powerful men in the workplace, in the political world. It is pervasive.
We've
but I'm
leave it
more
at
worried about the woman who is waiting tables and getting harassed by somebody, and she's got no recourse.
All right, we're going to have Inside Stories of the Week right after this. Stay with us.
6ABC's Inside Story is presented by Temple University.
Time for Inside Stories of the Week, and let's start with Ed.
Monica, in January, talk is that Rex Tillerson is out as Secretary of State, Mike Pompeo from CIA to State, and Senator Tom Cotton from Arkansas into the CIA position.
Interesting changes coming. All right, Larry.
Kudos to the Eagles' Malcolm Jenkins, who writes a criminal justice column for us at The Citizen. When the Eagles play the Seahawks tonight, he will not protest by putting his arm in the air, but he's going to continue doing the work of calling attention to criminal justice reform.
All right, Don.
Monica, Cindy Bass, my councilwoman, I live in Philadelphia, councilperson, has a crazed idea. I get the stop and goes are a problem. These alcohol things, they're down in neighborhoods. Once you take away the bulletproof glass, can't have that just in those sorts of stores. And there's going to be a big protest, of course, by Korean merchants this coming week.
All right, Donna.
In a tribute to civility and nonpartisanship, I want to acknowledge the wonderful work of the late Fred Anton, who will be thought of widely and tributed across the Pennsylvania society this weekend. This was a man who was a Republican, but he was a thought leader. He was decent, he was civil, and he was looked up to by so many, both Democrat and Republican. Let's have more of that in his honor.
Thank you. Thank you, everybody, for your thoughts and your time this weekend. Thanks so much to you for watching. Hope you have a great week ahead, and we'll see you right back here next Sunday morning.